right. My wife was horse riding down in Kinsale, and our horse trainer needs 2 tickets urgently. So, I need 2 tickets, lads. Whatever you can do now by the next 45 minutes, put that in the foremost of your thoughts.
The Hard Yards, brought to you by Ladbrokes. Passionate about sport.
It's gone to the short side. Oh, it's not gone to the short side. It's gone to the try line.
I don't think we met before, but I'm the referee on this field, not you.
Hi Rob, Zeeb's here. Just want to discuss the captaincy next.
He's calling.
When Ringrose comes through, oh. That is brilliant from Ringrose. Ringrose is going here. What a score!
Hello and welcome to episode 26 of The Hard Yards, the rugby podcast from Sports Joe. I'm Andy McGeady. I'm joined by Kev McLaughlin and Pat McCarry in studio. Ronan O'Gara is on the line from Paris and John Muldoon, Connacht captain, is in Galway. We have a big interview with Exeter's Gareth Steenson coming up for you. But first, Mr. Muldoon, welcome to The Hard Yards.
Good morning. How are things?
Things are not too bad. How is Galway on an All-Ireland final week?
Yeah, it's starting to, the buzz is starting to come around Galway now. The rush for tickets is truly on. Generally, obviously, everyone always says, oh, wait till mid end of the week and the tickets will start arriving back and the flurry for tickets won't be too bad. But at the moment, there ain't too many tickets floating around. So
I'm looking nervous.
Are Cork in this final, are they, Rog?
No, right. My wife was horse riding down in Kinsale, and our horse trainer needs 2 tickets urgently. So, I need 2 tickets, lads. Whatever you can do now by the next 45 minutes, put that in the foremost of your thoughts.
Join the back of the queue, Rog. Join the back of the queue.
Yeah, I'd be very popular in Connacht, right? I said it'd go well out of the way.
Bundy and a few of the lads never seen a hurling match in their life, but they're all mad to go through to the final, so there. It's always the same. Every Mayo man is trying to get a ticket to sort for the Galway man, so it's getting a bit demanding down here.
Are
you going to be able to go yourself, John?
Yeah, thankfully, I was actually in with the Miners the other morning, they gave me 2 tickets for the game, which is brilliant, so I didn't have to worry too much about trying to find 2, but yeah, I was in chatting to them for a little while. Bringing back good memories of beating Cork in 2000. Get that dude in there quickly. Bringing back good memories for me when I was a minor. So yeah, look, it's very exciting for them, the young fellows, all about to embark on college life. So we spoke a bit about that, and just spoke about sort of the excitement building up to
it.
Are they
in the final as well, John? Are they? Are the minors?
Yeah,
in the final?
It's a double header. They're in the final as well, so they did well to get to a final. They're quite a young squad, and they scored in, I think, the 64th minute to win the game a couple of weeks ago. So Joe Cannon's nephew's on it as well. He plays full forward, a corner forward. So
jeez, everyone in Galway should do the lotto this weekend. They have a great chance of winning. it's not gonna happen again.
If we could win in bloody All-Ireland, we'd give up the lotto. It's good excitement around the place, in fairness. So hopefully, look, it'll be great to win it. Obviously, we haven't been waiting as long as Waterford, but I think 2 teams have been waiting a long time. It'd be great to see someone new get their hands in the trophy, but obviously I'm biased. I want to see Galway do it.
So why aren't you playing in the All-Ireland hurling final? Why are you speaking as a rugby man?
Because I was too slow and fast to play hurling, basically. All I did was take the head off lads when I was young, so that worked to a certain point, and then you had to give it up. But nah, look, I enjoyed playing hurling. All my mates played hurling, and it was I suppose I was part of a team that was quite successful in Portumna, and obviously they went on to win a lot of Club All-Ireland, and a lot of them went on to represent Galway. So I had good fun when I was a kid playing hurling growing up, and to be honest, that was my first love. I didn't grow up thinking about being a rugby player. I grew up thinking about being Joe Cooney and playing beside Joe Cooney, and he was my hero growing up. But rugby only kind of came late into my life, so it changed once it did. But when I was out the back garden lifting trophies, it was always Sam Maguire or Lee McCarthy Cup I was lifting up, so never a Rugby World Cup or whatever else you think of.
So anyway, you've a match yourself to prepare for with Connacht this weekend. How's the prep for Glasgow looking?
Yeah, look, I think it's this time of year. Rog and Kevin will tell you there as well that everyone thinks they're in great shape. Everyone thinks it's the hardest pre-season they've done, and they're excited for the season to start, and they think that they're going to be their year, and excitement of building, and etc. I think we're no different. Obviously, we have a new coach in, things are very different, a new voice, backroom staff, everything's all changed. So a lot of excitement and a lot of anticipation for Saturday to get on the paddock and go out and perform. And I suppose this is the time when everyone believes and hopes that it is their year. I think the excitement of having a new coach has added that extra little bit of dimension to us as well. And as I said, some background staff, but everyone's on edge for the last couple of weeks and months training. And I suppose for a lot of people, it's wiped the slate clean. So especially for some of the younger lads, they feel that they're getting a good opportunity to go out and show their wares. So yeah, look, it's exciting time ahead. We're still really getting to know Kieran and some of the lads, so it's good. But look, we're playing Glasgow first game, and they did a bit of a job on us last year. We all know the troubles we had last season. We did one warm-up game, unfortunately we got let down by a team or two, but the preparation gone well this year. We've had three friendlies, and we've got better each game, which is exactly what you want to do. And we're just looking forward to Saturday coming now at this stage, looking forward to playing Glasgow. And obviously there's a little kind of a hidden game going on in the background. Obviously KK and Dave Rennie, who are very good friends with the Chiefs, so I was chatting to him yesterday, and he was very nervous about it. He wanted to get one up on his own mate, so a little sideline act going on there as well.
What's the biggest difference so far that you've noticed? Pat Lam World of Connacht to KK World?
Yeah, I think obviously we can't forget that Pat brought us a trophy, and I suppose put a lot of structure and put a lot of belief in the squad, and we'll never forget that. And I suppose his way of looking at things shaped and changed a lot of what we'd like to see, where we're going in the future. And that'll never be forgotten from what Pat's done. But so KK's come in and tried to develop that and try and move it on. They're two very, very different people, and they're going to have different outlooks on how to play the game and different ways of I suppose skinning the cat. So it's just a matter of getting used to him and getting used to his way of doing things, and get up to scratch as quickly as possible. Obviously he's coming from quite a successful team in the Chiefs, and he's had some very good success as a coach over the last 20 years, so he's got the pedigree to do it. It's just up to us now to go out and get his game plan and try and get that to the best of our ability as quickly as possible. Remember, he's only here about three and a half weeks, so it's still a learning curve for us. It's still getting used to him and the way he delivers stuff and everything that goes with that. But yeah, look, so far it's been very good. It's been a bit of a breath of fresh air, and the lads will tell you, when new coaches come in, there's that little bit of excitement, and it takes time to get to know it. And as I said earlier, it's a real big thing. It gives everyone that fresh start and a fresh approach to things, and everyone feels that they're on the same level playing field. And that's always a good thing for the squad and the environment in the squad, and the mentality going forward.
Yeah, a change of coach is a real positive thing. You know, it takes the settled players, the guys who are settled in the jerseys, out of their comfort zone. And like John was saying there, the guys who maybe have been struggling under Pat for the last few years, they're suddenly thinking, right, here I go, clean sheet, new coach, day one, there's a real buzz in the training session. And you know, it was really the biggest change in coach for me was when we went from Michael Checker to Joe Schmidt. And I just remember even the first 6 months with Joe, it was so different. Everyone was adapting, everyone was learning, and everyone was kind of at the same stage with him. And change is good in a club. And I think for Connacht now, you know, huge amount of success, John, for you guys, like obviously winning the trophy, with the Pro 12 a couple of years ago, and it just seems now is a natural time. And I know obviously it didn't you know, it wasn't planned that, that Pat was going to go to Bristol, but it seems like you've done very well getting KK in. He seems like a great coach, and hopefully it'll have the same impact as Joe did in Leinster, coming in, changing things, bringing new ideas, and allowing some of the young talent in Connacht to come through and really thrive underneath them. Yeah,
I'll bring Rog in there. Rog, what was it like for you when you got a new coach in?
Geez, I didn't have too many, I don't think, did I?
No, you didn't have too many changes, no.
Declan Kidney was there for too many years, that was the problem. Yeah, that was one consistent team, that's for certain. That was school for 20 years, from the age of 14 to 34. I agree with the lads. I think it's very strange in the fact that everything is about the team, yet everything is about yourself, because sport is so selfish that you just kind of concentrate on you trying to be the best you can be, and then hopefully that adds to the team. So players are incredibly selfish. They need to be thinking like that. So like, my goals would be completely different to what John wants to get out of his season, or what Kevin, the collective would be the same, but my skill set, I have to work on things that wouldn't be any way similar to what they have. So there was, when they came in, it was obviously I think you just kind of knew straight away whether they were going to work or not. And but I think from the year I played in the generation, I think especially in Munster, so much of it was player driven, and irrespective of whether you agree with the coach or not, you back the coach, and then you made a plan and went out and tried and performed the plan. But I think all the really great environments are player driven. I completely agree that the role of the coach is huge. The big thing for me, I'm fascinated to ask John, are you still playing 2-4-2, Johnny?
No, we won't be, Rog. No. It's going to change up, yeah. Yeah, it's going to change up. Obviously, if you watch the Chiefs and what they do, it'll be something similar to what they do. Not exactly the same, but obviously Kieran was the attack coach down there. So
he was the 1-3-3-1, Matt. There are the Chiefs start, are they?
Very similar to that, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
It's not exactly that. There's different, obviously, variations and everything, ways of doing things. So, the 2-4-2 system, it's still there, but it's not.
It's in the back pocket.
The word, I would say the word we'd be using is we're not heavily reliant on the 2-4-2 system. So there'll be room for change.
Going on there. But you might explain to everyone what the 2-4-2 is. I thought you were talking about soccer formations for a second there.
Sorry. Well, John, you go away. You're an expert in it. Kev, you should remember from the Murrayfield massacre.
No. I blocked that out of my mind a long time ago.
Okay. So basically, it's obviously the four of the tight five in the middle, and then you're more athletic second row with a back row on the edge, and then you've obviously two back rows on the other edge, and the idea is obviously the second row, the distributing second row in the middle, so he's there to carry or pass and go out the back. So I mean, you obviously try and get lots of width in your on your game, but the way to defend that, which a lot of teams had figured out last year, is just make sure you've got big line speed, and that's why the edges come up on the outside. So there's certainly still time and place to do that, but I suppose last year a lot of teams figured out that that's what we're doing and send it as appropriately, but there's still times where we will be doing that. There's obviously a lot of new stuff brought in as well, and that's basically the concept of the 2-4-2. That's what we were doing for the last couple of years, and as Rog said, it worked quite well for us, but like everything else, analysis comes along and people figured out pretty quickly.
You also lost the key ball carrier in Muldoney, don't you? I think that role is the same as Retallick does, I think.
When you
have the capacity to take it to the line and play it at the last minute, very, very few second rows are as good as those two in the world, and I think that really makes that 2-4-2 a
I watched Ali doing it a couple of times last year for Grenoble, and he was good at it there as well. So yeah, look, it's certainly a skill that you master, and some second rows obviously very skillful. And I'm sure Ali's basketball in the early days, Ali was a pretty good basketballer, and that probably helped him skill wise with the ball. And yeah, look, it's obviously when you've got Bundy and Robbie Henshaw and a few other lads outside him, then when you're making room for those lads, it worked extremely well for us.
Yeah, but as you say, it's the little detail, because your man, if they turn their hips toward the opposition goal line, so all the defenders drift off them. And as you know, it's the tiny margins at the level, because he was able to, I think, to attract defenders and then release at the right time, which is why it works. But it was, it's really interesting as an outsider to watch it.
Yeah.
John, very quickly, very quickly before we let you go, John, the South African angle to this year's tournament, are you looking forward to the travelling, or is it disruptive?
No, I think it's a good thing for the competition. Obviously, having a trip to South Africa, having two new teams coming in, adds that bit of excitement and that feel of something new. I think competitions and structures and leagues like that, when something new comes in, as long as it doesn't disrupt too much, and obviously there is a little bit of a new format and take a little bit of time to see how that goes. But I think it's definitely exciting, and you see articles yesterday and the day before saying that there could be one or two more teams coming in. I think the big thing is to make sure the quality of the players and the quality of the opposition coming in adds to the league, and once that happens, then it's a plus for everything. And certainly by the looks of things, the two South African teams will be pretty strong, and it'll probably take them a while to get used to playing in our conditions, and very different to what they're used to. But some of the fat lads aren't looking forward to going down to the high altitude, so that'll be interesting for some of them come midwinter, how that will go.
John, can I ask you?
That'll surely test them.
Can I ask you quickly how some of the new lads are looking? Is Deegan there yet? Is he playing with you yet?
No, he hasn't arrived yet. He's still waiting on his visa. Jared Butler is here. He actually played the last couple of games of warm-ups, and he looks very, very good. He played in the Bristol game and Munster game and the Wasps game, actually. So he played in all three. He looked very good, very sharp. Obviously, he's coming from the Super 15 team, or Stephen with the Brumby, so he's probably a little bit ahead of the rest of us, but he looks very good. And there's a couple of other lads that have arrived as well. Gav Thornby's here, obviously, after having a stint in New Zealand playing club rugby, and a few other lads. But yeah, I think there's still one or two more to arrive yet. So recruitment and all that kind of stuff's ongoing, so people will keep coming as the year goes on, and keep hopefully adding to the squad.
And listen, John, we'll let you go. Thanks very much for taking the call, and best of luck for the season.
Yep, cheers. All the best.
Right, so that's John Muldoon, kind of captain. You know, to say coaches come and go, but John Muldoon is always there. lads, is John someone you'd like to see as your captain? You know what I mean? He's Connacht, born and bred. Is that what a captain should be?
Yeah, I think it's definitely one of the elements, is that someone is very committed to the club, someone who's been around a long time, and someone who's Connacht, or in my case would have been Leinster through and through. I think, you know, guys like Geno and Leo would have been like that. They would have been, I know they spent a couple of years across in Leinster, but they were Leinster born and bred, and they knew what it meant to be part of Leinster. I think that's important. But, you know, like, there are a lot of, for me, like, there's no specific technique or to being a captain, there's no specific trait you look in a person. I think for me, and Roger will probably back me up in this, like, the best captains just have something about them. They have a bit of an aura, and people, lads, just want to follow them. They want to get in behind them. They want to play for them. And what I mean by that is, like, say two of the captains I would have played under that I really enjoyed playing for were Geno and Leo, and they're both very, very different in how they captained.
Explain that.
Leo would have barely opened his mouth during a game, and his whole thing was he had an aura. He would have led by example. He would have empowered others to lead, but everyone always loved playing for him. Geno would barely shut up start to finish.
Yeah, I'm going to attest to that.
He would scream start to finish, and I love playing for him as well. And what I'm trying to say is, it's not the best captains scream and shout in the huddle and get the lads fired up. The best captains have something about them where lads want to play for them. Okay. And you either have it or you don't. It's not where you can bring someone in and say, right, I'm going to teach this guy how to be a captain.
Yeah.
And I'd imagine, like, I haven't played for Mo, but I imagine he has that in Connacht, where everyone knows he's Connacht born bred. He has played more games for the club than anyone else has before. And he always puts, you know, the club's best interest in heart, and always has. And someone that the lads want to get in behind, he always plays at a certain level, you know. So,
Raj, what do you look for in a captain?
Yeah, I think just to add to Kevin's point, I think a good captain just sits in seamlessly. You don't take much notice of what is going on, but it immediately hits you when a coach is named the wrong captain. If you can understand me, because it's just, you're kind of just saying, this guy can't talk, please stop talking. And that's happened once or twice, where you just don't want that when you're preparing for a game or in the week of the game. But
is that something you notice? Is that something you notice instantly, Raj?
Yeah, instantly. But the reality is, I think in the time I played professional rugby, and I think it's a massive strength of Irish rugby, the leaders we produce in this country, it's incredible. I think I go back to Mick Galway and Munster. For me, was, as Kev said, he just had an aura, had a presence, even a smile. He could just detect what was needed without even saying much, or he might just cut the coach at a certain point, or other times he might just he just knew. He always had the tempo of the group in mind. And then you had Keith Wood, you had Brian O'Driscoll, you had Paul O'Connell. So you're talking about world-class leaders there, never mind leaders for Ireland. I think they were special leaders as opposed to special players.
Compare Paulie's leadership style to Brian's.
Completely incomparable. Personality incomparable, completely different. Brian plays 13, I think. Obviously, Paul is in the engine room. I think rugby union, it's suited if you have a fella of the capabilities, character of Paul O'Connell, that the captain is in the pack. I think they're just closer to the action, they're closer to the ref, they have a better relationship with the ref, because they can get the feel of the game better, I think. Brian was led by example, led by his performances. That's what he prided himself in. Then when he had a few rough patches throughout his career, when his form dipped, he questioned himself whether he was the right man to do the job. And I think he was the right man, but he needed to, I suppose, alter his lifestyle. He did that. He got the best out of himself and he reinvented himself. And you have to, I think, remember, he captained Ireland, I don't have the official stats, would it be 60, 70 times, not more, probably. So that's a lot of captain's meetings. Yeah. And it's a lot of presentation to your players and a lot of trying to get the best out of your players. So I think people underappreciate the amount of extra work that goes into captaincy as well. It's a difficult job if you're to do it to the best of your ability. And I just think that Paul put everything into his preparation. That was what he got confidence on, preparing his team, preparing himself, being, I suppose, first in the room, last out of the gym, last off the pitch. And he spoke very well. So the two of them were very different, yet in the world of rugby, very similar. But the most important thing is that their teams enjoyed, I think, spectacular success when they were both leaders.
Yeah, what you were saying there, Rod, is spot on. Like, people underestimate how hard being captain is. I only did it a few times for Leinster.
Were named captain the season you retired.
Yeah, so it was during the World Cup period, a lot of senior guys away, so Leo asked me to step up for that period anyway. And, you know, there's so much more to consider.
As usual, Kev is underestimating. Now, that's a massive honour, you know, especially in that Leinster.
Yeah, it was an honour.
Where they were coming. Yeah, massive honour.
But particularly based off the captains that had gone before me. And, like, like you said, Rog, like, I think people do underestimate how hard it is. And like, there's so much more to consider when you're captain. You have to begin thinking about, like, how did training go? Are we at the right level here? Are we too confident? Or maybe we're too relaxed? Are we too wound up in the lead up to a big game? Do we need to calm the lads down a bit? You know, is the energy and confidence there? Like, captain is the best person to figure that out, and the coach will rely on them to figure that out. Like, Leo...
And I think at the level the game of rugby is played in Ireland, it's hard enough to get your own role right with the competition, a player opposite you. Never mind getting your role right and the captain's role. You're kind of trying to do two jobs on the go, which is extremely difficult because you're the clearest thing or the nearest thing to the management as well, because you have to have that link, because the senior players in all organisations are hugely important, and it's usually senior players and the captain that have to relay the message to the management. So as you say, your work is never ending basically, and it just plays more on your mind when you are the captain.
It's a hard line because you have to play well. Like, there's nothing worse than, like, at the end of the day, if you're not playing well, you can't be bowling lads out of it for making mistakes if you're not doing it yourself. So you have to get that line between selfishness and selflessness, because you have to be selfless to put the team first, but then you have to be selfish in your own preparation. It's incredibly challenging. There's also distractions. I used to find, even just like, I had a very, very set preparation for a game, and having to go and do the toss in the lead up to my prep, I found that distracting. When's the referee going to come? Oh, fuck, not this ref. I hate chatting to this guy. Well, whoever. Having to chat to the ref during the game is distracting. Again, it can take you out of your role. Like, it's all these different things you have to mentally prepare yourself for. And like Roger's saying, like,
no one has an idea. I agree, because I was a captain a few times, and then, like, if you're trying to be a captain and a goal kicker, you may as well forget about it, because you're kind of having all boot or two at the post, then you get called, we'll do the toss, okay, run in, back out, and then there's some issue with new rules with the front row, or he wants the captain inside, you know. It's just like, that's why I think people on the outside who ask about a 10. A 10 has enough on its plate as it is, trying to run the game from an attack point of view, from a strategy point of view. And then without the captaincy, it's those little distractions that I think teams can do without. There are better people on the team, I think, that can make those decisions around the coin toss, around getting the dressing room right if you are the kicker, because for the kicker, you have to, it's the only guy in the team who is practicing that skill for an hour before the game, because essentially there's him and the reserve kicker who need to kick the ball over the bar. Everyone else is concentrating on collisions and their own skill set before the game. So
Raj, is the captain the same role in France?
In what?
Just because
in what regard, sorry?
Well, it's just, there's a lot of things that are slightly different in French rugby.
There's a lot more games too, obviously, I think, in the fact that, you know, you can have, in the league alone, you know what I mean, it takes 29 games to win it if you're going through the league or the qualifying of the playoffs, you know? So that's a lot of league games, then there's European games, and then there's French international games. So, I think it's an interesting question. Sometimes you have squad captains, sometimes you have a captain for the season, but like, there's far more rotation over here. So, but it's I don't know, Andy, really. I think it's way more tighter in Irish rugby, the role of the captaincy and what's expected of the captain.
Isn't the best thing a bit strange that he's been made Ulster captain for the season as well? Like, and the fact that he'd be Ireland captain.
I was thinking the exact same thing, Pat. I said,
what's in the tea leaves,
it
lads?
Seems like a big workload.
Yeah.
Or else I was thinking, I think John O'Gibbs going in as Ulster, I think he would readily identify with the qualities of Rory Best. I think he wants to put a stamp on it. I'd say maybe Rory Best may be the Irish captain, probably will be the Irish captain. But I think John O'Gibbs wants Rory Best emphasising all his qualities in the leader of his pack, but Kevin would be better positioned to comment on that maybe than I am. But I think Rory's hard, and he's honest, and he's direct, and he's everything you want in a captain. I think that guy has serious qualities as a leader as well.
I think it's the right thing to do. Ulster need to put Ulster first. They need a big season. Bestie's the man.
But that decision could not have been made in isolation.
Yeah, potentially not. But like, there's no one else kind of jumping out at you to be captain up there right now. And they need to have a big season. And like Rog said, Jono's coming in, and he has an idea of probably making this. He wants to make this the toughest pack in Ireland.
Yeah.
And Bestie's the man to lead that. He's like Ulster's toughest forward, so it makes sense, you know.
Yeah,
and you think, Andy, that it wasn't discussed with Joe Schmidt?
No, I'm the opposite. I'd say you don't make a decision like that without discussing it with Joe, because it's a lot of extra workload. I mean, we've talked just in the last 10 minutes about the mental effort, the extra just stuff you have to do and think about as a captain. And when you're doubling up, like, that's a lot. So it would make you wonder if you're of suspicious mind, which I am. anyway, Rog, look.
Who's the Irish captain?
That's what I mean.
It'd be a lot for him. Well, like, yeah, I still keep thinking about Peter O'Mahony, but maybe that's just me getting ahead of myself. But it'd be an awful lot on Best, wouldn't it, to kind of have those two things to do, and he'd only going to feature maybe 14, 15 games.
I think the man of his experience. I think they're going to manage his workload. I think. Yeah. I think he's. I would say it's far more likely probably him than an Irish captain in the back row at this current stage would be a bigger call, I would feel, with the competition for places there.
Yeah.
You actually, well, you really can't guarantee you anyone a spot in that back row, can you, at the moment?
No, you can't. Okay, we'll see how this turns out, right? Could be just us looking for a story, or there's no story, Pat, what do you reckon?
I've been guilty of that in the past.
Miss out a story from anywhere.
Exactly, yeah. Here, listen, your season started last weekend, Rog. You that was looking a bit squeaky in the first half. You were 18-3 down against Castro.
Listen, looking a lot worse than a little bit more squeaky, believe me. I think when you kind of come into coaching management, you see it so differently. So as John was saying about, everyone thinks in pre-season they're the fittest, fastest, strongest they've ever been, and they're hitting great scores, and there's a great buzz in the club. And then first game, the only game that matters, pre-season game, don't matter, just as long as everyone understands that. So you're judged on your competitive games. So after 40 minutes, I think you're 18, after 36 minutes, you're 18-3 down at home. It's not how you'd like to start the season. that's the best way I can put it to you. But thankfully, we conceded 3 points in the second half. We got our act together, and we played well for 35 minutes and got a result, you know. So
first coach to ever start. Different. First coach to ever start Dan Cotter at 12 rather than 10. Are you?
No, he started there a few times, Kev. I suppose it's like, if, as we say over here, we're giving a carrot to Remy Tallis, you know. We need to give him a carrot so he can. So that was essentially the thinking there, because Dan is, he's not an ideal 12, but he's still capable of doing a very good job there, but essentially he's the best in the world at 10. Was a decision taken at half time to change the halfbacks, a guy who wouldn't be familiar to people in Irish rugby, maybe people who watch it close, Teddy Eberin, the ex-Breeze scrum half, a very lightweight player but an exceptional rugby player. He came on and had a huge 40 minutes and essentially put massive intensity and injected pace into our game, and we got a result, which as everyone knows, if you can kind of get momentum in the first 3 games of the season, your season is really set up from there, as opposed to losing the first game, it sounds very odd, but you're chasing the game or the season, even if it's a 28 or 26 game season.
So moving on to something a little further on in the season, so the TV coverage of the Six Nations has moved
something
from
something more interesting. Is that what you really want to say?
Well, we'll see. You're going to be on our
screen. I detected your tone.
You're going to be on our screen.
You're going to be. You can go and watch the Gwent Dragons and Bennett and Treviso and talk up a good game about those teams. Okay.
Here, get Jackman on line one there, Pat. Will you? But you're going to be on TV3 for the Six Nations.
In 2018. Yeah. For the Six Nations competition, yeah, we'll be on TV3. Yeah. Unfortunately, it's gone from RT and it's gone to TV3, so hugely excited now to be joining some quality analysts in TV3 to have the opportunity. As I said, if you're not a camp player for Ireland, the next best thing is watching them play, and kind of once you go into studio, you get that kind of buzz that you're nearly playing the game. So I love rugby. I'd be watching it anyway. So there are games, obviously, racing at the same time. So I'd be able to make a few of the games and a few of the other non-Irish games as well, because it's important that I can add value, hopefully, from a French point of view as well.
But we're not allowed to call you a pundit. Is that right?
Andy, you can call me whatever you want.
Right, we'll leave that one there. The boys will be back later answering your Twitter questions, but up next, we'll talk to the Irishman that kicked Exeter to the Premiership title last season.
The Hard Yards, brought to you by Ladbrokes, passionate about sport.
Welcome back to the Hard Yards. Exeter won the Premiership last season, and a key man for them in their journey from Championship obscurity has been fly half Ulsterman Gareth Stevenson. Gareth, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, guys. Good morning. How you doing?
Hey.
Pretty good. So anyway, Premiership champions. Is that still feeling good?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, absolutely. I suppose it's been a couple of months now, and we've obviously got ourselves through pre-season and all that. And after any pre-season, everyone says the same thing. It's always tough. But I think now that we're on the other side of it, it's finally sunk in who we are, and it's really teed us up nicely going into the season.
You've been around there for a while at Exeter. It's not many players win a championship and then get promoted and then win the Premiership with the same team.
Yeah, no, I think I didn't really realise that until I was asked that about a month ago, and it was a bit like, oh yeah, I didn't even think of it like that. It just seemed to be the natural progression what the club was doing, and you know, it's a nice feeling to obviously get promoted with the club first and foremost, and now to see the progression that we've made, and now to get ourselves into a position where we could challenge to actually win the Premiership, and obviously then to come away and win it. It's a great place to be, but now it's another challenge again for us. Now it's something completely brand new, which is very exciting, and we've always talked about as a club progressing, and again it's another chance now because everyone's going to be looking to come after us.
Yeah, how do you think that's going to change it? Because, you know, Exeter has always been viewed as a small club, you know, with the greatest of respect, something that you said you've been building towards, but now people are going to be gunning for you. Do you have to prepare differently for that, like mentally for that?
I think that's the biggest challenge, I think, for all of us, you know, how to go and back it up again. We don't really want to be a team that sort of win it one year and then sort of fitter away. You know, we kind of want to. It's almost like last season, whenever we started the year, we didn't really start that well. We were still sort of patting ourselves on the back after making the final, and it took us the guts of 2 months really to realise that, hang on, we could lose a season here if we don't really get our heads together. And thankfully, you know, around October time we sort of did, and we didn't really look back from there. And again, it's about starting well again this season. We've got a tough fixture when we head away to Gloucester, but it sort of sharpens the mind a little bit because it is a local derby for us, and it's always a big game. And hopefully we can get off to a better start than we did last year.
Steno, Kev here. Pretty amazing story, Exeter, really. When you look at what's happened there over the last few years, I remember we played against you in 2015, and in the Champions Cup. Every game was unbelievably hard, and we just knew when we were coming up to play against Exeter, it was going to be the tough, like one of the toughest games of the season. And there just seemed to be something about you lads. And like when you look at your success and where you come from, what Andy's saying, from the Championship to winning the Premiership last year, in a relatively short period of time, without doing what the likes of Toulon have done, where they bought every player under the sun, like, it must have been special to be part of, firstly, but like what has it been like? And you know what, I presume there's been a huge focus on culture there and trying to build something special from within. Can you talk us a little bit through that and what it's been like to be part of?
Yeah, so when I really sort of joined, it was we'd signed a lot of guys. There was about 50 guys in the squad, all made up of like relatively the best players in the Championship at the time. It was all the local sort of teams, and we quickly realised after not getting promotion that year that something had to change, and that's when Rob Baxter got the job. He got the promoted up from being forward coach into the head coach, and he brought in some good coaches, and Ali Heifer and Ricky Pello. But these are the guys that are still there. You know, we've been there basically since I've been here. Rob's obviously been here basically his whole life. He just seems to be part and parcel of the furniture. But it was just really that sort of, we always had that attitude that a lot of the guys that came in had always been told by other clubs, you aren't good enough, you aren't, you know, you've been let go by other teams. And we always had a wee bit of a chip on our shoulders, and even whenever we got promoted that year, we weren't meant to be promoted, it was meant to be Bristol. I remember people telling me with 10 minutes to go, we're winning by 15 points and apparently Bristol are still going to come back and beat us. You know, that was just sort of the way we always had our back up a little bit. And even when we got promoted, we were getting relegated again. There was extra Chiefs, they're going to do nothing, they're going to go down again, and we think we finished 8th that year. So we've always had that sort of thing, and we've never really went and got a lot of players in at any time. We've always got about 4 or 5 fellas who sort of come in and sort of fit the mould. And yeah, like I always laugh, and boys always laugh as well, we always seem to find misfits a little bit, and we find a way to make them fit. Yeah, which is quite a nice way. You know, but we, you know, that's down to the coaching staff. They've sort of went out into the market and have looked at guys who they feel will come in, add to the culture first and foremost. I think a lot of guys that come in, they really fit what we're about, and they buy into it straight away. We don't really look to go and, like you say, go for the big money guys and sign big superstar names, because sometimes they're hard to handle, maybe, potentially, I don't know. I've never had to deal with a lot of them, because but we seem to be getting our superstars from within. So, but we've got a good academy structure which has come through too. You know, we're getting Jack Noel coming through that, and Henry Slade. We're starting to see guys really push on into international honours, and it is from within the club. Whenever, you know, I'm very fortunate to have been here for as long as I have and actually seen the growth of the place, and it is a lovely thing to see, and hopefully it continues, because you know we want to keep progressing as a club. Like I said, we've taken a step along the ladder again. We've got ourselves as Premiership champions, but now we want to try and push the club forward. And the next thing to do that is to head into Europe and be competitive and hopefully push the club forward in that light.
I'll bring you back just to one point there, Gareth. You mentioned that a lot of the players that end up with Exeter or to sign with Exeter are told they're not good enough, or they have a chip on the shoulder. I mean, was that you at one point? Because, you know, you were an Irish under-21 captain, and then suddenly you're playing at Rotherham. You're not wearing an Ulster jersey.
Yeah, 100%. I'm probably as good an example of anything, you know, that definitely, you know, I can remember being told back home that this isn't going to happen for you, and you either need to go find a job or, you know, give something another try, you know. And I remember sitting down and being told that and being devastated about it, and then taking a real leap of faith to go across to Rotherham. I mean, Andre Best was in charge. He'd been chasing me for a couple of years to go to Belfast Harlequins, and he gave me a chance to go across the water. And it was really the parents sort of said, look, if you want to do this, you know, we'll back you and off you go. And I had no idea about English rugby. I had no idea about, well, it was National League rugby at the time, and I went over, really enjoyed my time, got an opportunity to go to Cornish Pirates. So I went from one extreme to up north to a completely different extreme down in Penzance. And then thankfully, you know, Chiefs sort of, I played a couple of good games against Chiefs, got picked up there, and haven't really looked back from that, really. And I've had a really good good time. I really enjoyed it, and you know, it's something that I've never really had a chance to go back to Ireland. I've never really been offered a contract ever to go home, so it's not like it's really been an option for me.
Steno, going back to something else you said there, talking about playing with a chip in your shoulder and, you know, the ammo that gave you guys. And I remember in Leinster, we had the same thing. It's like the press was against us and everyone had turned on us, and it was very easy for us to get revved up.
The press, Pat, the press.
Yeah,
remember that?
We were, looking across on one of the mirrors. It's very easy for us to get up for games and very easy for us to get motivated. And the challenge after we won the first European trophy was, what do we do now? How do we get up for games? What's our motivation? Have you guys had any thoughts or begun to speak internally this year about a different approach to success this season?
Yeah, well, it's like you say, Kev, we're very much in that situation now. I think everybody that's been asking us is, how do you feel about being the hunted? How you feel about teams coming after you? You know, we've always had a nice mantle that we were everyone's second favourite team as such. We're not going to have that anymore. And, you know, it's a like I said at the top of the show, that it was like, it's such a good challenge for us because it's completely brand new and it's something to really get excited about. We've sort of really talked about being the aggressors. How, you know, if you're sort of like at the top of the tree a little bit, you know, or let's be the silverback gorilla and go out and be the guys who go out and initiate the fight. Because, you know, if you're at the top of the tree, people want to come knock you off the perch. But if you keep going after them, you know, you might scare them off a bit. Maybe, I don't know. But that's the sort of mentality. But we want to keep going and enjoying it. We don't want it to be a burden. You know, we don't want it to be, yes, we were Premiership champions last year. It stifles us. It makes us afraid. You know, that's what our game's built on. Our game's built on going and challenging teams and ultimately enjoying our rugby. And hopefully we can go out and initiate the fight as such.
Gareth, personally, sort of career-wise, do you reckon you've ever got a fair crack with Ireland again after you left the island, as it were?
Honestly, no, I don't think I really have. I've never had, I think I've had one conversation from Les Kiss whenever the British and Irish Lions went away in 2009. I had a quick phone call, and I think it was a summer tour, and I never really felt I've had an opportunity. I just think it's just the way it is that they don't seem to look across the water, which is unfortunate, because I think now that I'm at a different stage in my career, I can sort of say, if I'm being honest, I think I never really, I'd like to have just been given a phone call, or, you know, sort of told what was going on, or kept in the loop a little bit. I've never had an opportunity to go home, like I said, as well, to play in Ireland as well. So I'm very aware that you need to be playing back home, really, to be playing. But like I said, I've never had an opportunity to do that. So it's a little frustrating, but would it change what I've done in an extra club jersey for the sake of a cap here or there? Probably not.
No. Were England ever in contact?
I've had a couple of conversations. I've had more conversations with England than I have with Ireland. But no, it was always just, you know, you're English qualified now and stuff like that. But look, I'm very aware that there's a lot of good English tens around here, a lot of good young English tens as well, and things are going well for them as well. So look, I'm in the English system as well, so that's just, it's not something I can control, but look, I'm just enjoying playing here at Chiefs.
So listen, you mentioned Europe earlier on. That's going to be a whole... you've been in the Champions Cup before, obviously, but now you are Premiership champions. You've got Leinster, Montpellier and Glasgow. That's a tough enough pool, and you've got Leinster back-to-backs.
I thought you were going to say that's an easy pool.
Yeah, sorry, it's an easy pool.
I can tell you, everyone's very, very excited over here about going to Dublin around Christmas.
I remember, Steno, when we played against you over in Exeter, I think 2014, 2015, after the game, we were playing again the following week, and I remember chatting to you and asking what you were doing that night, and you were like, we're doing the same we do after every game, going for a few beers. I was kind of looking at you with a bit of shock on my face. And is that still the culture there, where you lads, like, as a team, go out for a few
100%.
Beers?
100%. Yeah. I think when the fixtures came out last week, and whenever the excitement and the buzz around the place. When we heard it was a 3:15 kickoff in the Aviva Stadium, and I think we were getting a flight to fly home at 11:00 the next day. There's a lot of boys excited, like
Christmas party sorted. A few Santa suits in the bags and the kit bags on the way over.
Oh yeah, well, you know, a couple of those boys aren't still here, Kevin, fortunately, but I'm sure they'll be the same sort of mindset.
That's okay, you'll have to lead the tour this time. Right, listen, we'll let you go. Gareth, thanks very much and good luck in the season ahead. We will have fan questions and tips for the weekend's rugby on the way.
The Hard Yards, brought to you by Ladbrokes, passionate about sport.
You're listening to the Hard Yards Rugby Podcast on Sports Joe. Thanks for listening today. We are joined by Hayley O'Connor from Ladbrokes, and our producer Joe Harrington is at the table now.
Hey, James, how are you?
This is the serious stuff now. Good.
Good.
I'm rolling in my bed of money.
Yeah, after week one, it's Andy who leads.
Yeah.
3-2. How do you feel about that, Pat?
I was let down by the English at the weekend in the Women's World Cup final, wasn't it? And
That was a serious game.
Great game of rugby, wasn't it? Yeah.
What about that prop getting a hat-trick in a World Cup final? Unbelievable for the...
That's good work.
The All Blacks, yeah. So yeah, Pat, you got a bit of work to do this week. So the first game we're going to talk about is Munster Treviso. Hayley, where are Ladbrokes on that?
Basically, it's a non-event in terms of betting in the outright. So Munster are 100-1 on. Treviso are 16-1. Should be a complete walk in the park for Munster, so punters always side with them. So if you're going to go looking at the handicap, we think that Munster at the moment they're -30, and opposing Italian teams away from home is the easiest money you can make, and you can back them +30 at 10-11.
Guys, what do you think?
We have to do this one on the spread.
We're both We're both going to go to Munster.
Really interesting game up in Ulster this weekend. The Cheetahs are coming to town. Like, obviously, Hayley, I guess maybe people don't know too much about the Cheetahs at this stage, but what do Ladbrokes have on it?
Yeah, so the Cheetahs, were giving them an 8-point advantage in the handicap. They're 11-4. Obviously, it's their first match since moving from Super Rugby, and Ulster have a really, really good record in their opening games of the Pro 12. I think they've lost just once in their opener since 2009, and they've also got an amazing record at home in the Pro 12. So currently Ulster are -8 in the handicap, 2-7 in the outright, but I'd expect that handicap to be wider.
What do you think, Andy?
I think it's going to be, if the Cheetahs can just keep, you know, average for the first couple of weeks, that'd be a good start for them. I mean, they're trying to manage essentially two squads here at the moment.
Yeah, with the Currie Cup and stuff like that as well, yeah. So, they'll just be kind of maybe looking to target teams when they get them to South Africa, won't they? So, like, I would say Ulster for that one as well. Going back to that Munster one, I don't think they're going to win by more than 30 points. Are we going for that, or are we just going straight?
You're going
out?
Under, yeah?
Yeah, I'm going under.
Okay,
great.
And then I'm going to go for just straight out Ulster. Ulster win.
Ulster win as well, Andy.
Yeah.
Interesting game as well. The Dragons versus Leinster. Bernard Jackman taking on his old province. How are we feeling about that, lads? Do you think Jackman's going to make a big impact there?
The pitch will make a big impact.
Right.
They've got rid of that slop fest, Rodney Friday, and is now a hybrid pitch in. So, I wouldn't underestimate that on, you know, the ability to actually coach a team as opposed to a team just surviving.
That's what we were both, remember we were there, and Jackman was telling the two of us, wasn't he, that he wants to make their home form. He wants that to be their big thing this season, not to lose games at home. But I'm going to say
their budget's a lot smaller than the other Welsh regions.
Yeah,
you know, never mind some of the other teams in the league. Leinster will be favourites for this game, Elia.
Yeah, they are. I suppose it depends on what sort of side Leinster show up with. So the odds could change dramatically once we find that out. But they're currently 1-4 and they're -9 in the handicap. And the Dragons are 3-1 and then +9 in the handicap at 10-11. But the Dragons didn't have a good pre-season, so they have no confidence boost heading into this match.
Yeah, I'm gonna go Leinster anyway, but I'll say Leinster, and then I'm gonna sprinkle in Max Deegan is gonna do something special in this game as well, which means nothing in the grand scheme of things. But
so that doesn't count as another vote, like another.
Do I get a bonus point? It's a try.
Yeah,
if he gets a hat trick, Pat, you got an extra point.
Connacht and Glasgow as well this weekend. Hayley, where are Ladbrokes at with that?
Can't pick between them. They're both 10 to 11. Two new coaches. Connacht have a massive home advantage. Again, going to depend heavily on the teams that turn up. Money will probably come for Glasgow, but then Connacht has become a really tough place to go in recent years, so very hard to call.
Glasgow.
Okay.
I thought that was going to be our point of difference, but all right. So I'll go. I'm going to go Connacht now for this.
Do you mean it?
I've changed on the.
Do
hoof.
You mean it?
No, but I'm going to just make things interesting a little bit. I'm chasing you now. So
that's an entertainer first, and foremost.
But Pat, you need to get your spoke in first because he keeps having first preference for the obvious.
Yeah, I'm going to go. I'm bagging in the next one here.
Plus, John Muldoon is just on the podcast as well.
Well,
so let's give him some support. Yeah,
Hayley, I'm not biting on that one.
Okay, let's jump around to the other games outside of the Irish provinces. Cardiff and Edinburgh, Hayley.
Yeah, a bit boring. Two unperforming teams. I think Cardiff always look like they should do a bit better, but they're I think they're missing international players. So Cardiff are 9-4 on, and Edinburgh are 7-4. And the handicap is 5 points. So Cardiff minus 5 is 10-11.
Let's go to Pat first.
Yes. Yeah. Cardiff for me.
I will go with Richard Cockerell and Edinburgh to do something interesting in Cardiff.
And rock the league to its foundations on its opening weekend.
Something like that, yeah.
Ospreys and Zebre?
250-1
Whoa.
On. So, total, say very similar to the Munster match. The Ospreys are minus 36 points. And actually, we expect that line to move again. So, Zebre are 25-1.
I'm going to go Ospreys. I'm going to say they're going to beat them by more than 36 points.
Okay. No, I'm happy to take the under on that.
Okay. And the final game of the weekend is Scarlets versus the Kings. Interesting game. Scarlets was getting Halfpenny back is big news, but he's not available. So, and again, I guess maybe an unknown quantity with the Kings, Hayley.
Yeah. So yeah, because the Kings are made up of players on most of them on loan, but we're going to do everything we possibly can to be on side with Scarlets. They're currently 20-1 on. They looked really well against Gloucester last week. So the handicap at the moment, lads, is minus 24 for Scarlets.
Yeah, this is going to be tough. The Kings are in a different situation to the Cheetahs.
You know,
it's not a split squad. It's a we lost. Plenty for squad. I'd almost look at the 24 for Scarlets on this.
Good. All right. I'll go against
I
you.
Will. Yeah.
Yeah.
So Pat, you're going what?
It'll be closer than that. So it'll be less than 24.
All you have to go is 23.
That's 23. Yeah.
And Andy, you're going for plus 24. Yeah.
Yeah.
This has made this weekend very interesting.
Yeah, guys, this is really interesting. So I'll just run down really quickly. So if you're listening and you want to go with Pat McCary's bets for this weekend, he thinks Munster are going to win by less than 30 points. He's going to go for an Ulster win, a Leinster win, a Connacht win, a Cardiff win, Ospreys plus 36 and Scarlets minus 24. And Andy McGeady, if you actually believe anything that man says, he's going Munster over 30 or plus 30, Ulster, Leinster, Glasgow, Edinburgh, Ospreys and Scarlets minus 24. So if you're at home, make some notes and see how we get on.
I'm not going with Ospreys, I'm going with Zebre because I'm taking the under.
Oh, sorry, you're taking the under there.
There you go.
So yeah, best of luck, boys, and we'll tat them up next week. Interesting though. Thanks for bringing some some diversity to the calls here. It's really good. Yeah. So up next we have Twitter questions for Kev and Raj.
Murder, She Wrote is the perfect thing to watch during the day. You can watch the start, fall off for 40 minutes, come back, see the end, perfect. You know what I mean? You've missed nothing, really. Remember, Raj, Kev in the Killiney used to have to bring two TVs into the room, one for you for Cheltenham. Like every red-blooded male in the country, he'd be watching the horse racing, whereas I'd have a TV for myself for things like Murder, She Wrote and Houses Under the Hammer. Murder, She Wrote is the perfect thing to watch during the day.
Raj and Kev are back to answer your fan questions. We put a call out during the week, and these are the best ones we got in. Use the hashtag AskThy on Twitter, AskTheHardYards, if you want a question next week. So, first one is from the Black and Red. Should the Pro 14 South African teams be allowed in European competition on merit ASAP? If not, then what needs to happen first? Kev?
No, I think they need to assimilate into the Pro 14 first, but I definitely can see that happening down the line. Yeah, I think it should. It's going to make the league better as well, that the top six teams or whatever it is qualify for Europe. Because it's a little bit messy this year. It's a top six, but if any of the top six are South African, then it's the next. So that's not amazing for the league, so they need to figure that out.
Yeah, like I think so as well. Again, people say, what are the English and the French sides going to say? But if this is the competition and that they finish in the top six in the competition, you don't want to devalue it by having a team that's finishing eight playing in it. So let's see how they get on this season. If one of the sides finishes top six, then it becomes a real discussion.
Okay. Raj, here's one for you. This is from Over the Hill Prop. Ask Raj about Clinton Huppert. And now, as a coach, how do teams avoid signing quote unquote lemons during recruitment season? Talk to us about Clinton Huppert, Raj.
He was signed to play for Munster. I think he played in the sports ground, but at the same time, you know what I mean? I don't think anyone should be calling him a lemon. You know what I mean? He wouldn't be a lemon if he got signed up in the first place. He obviously didn't perform well, but there could be reasons for that. I think it's a massive area of strength of the Irish provinces, getting their recruitment right, and they put huge, I'd say, time, energy and value on that. Over here in France, so much of it is driven by the agents and the power of the agents, so it's a completely different dynamic, and there are the success rate of successful signings, I would say, is on a percentage wise would be pretty low. Obviously completely different market, a far bigger market, but Roger, it's all about trying to get the quality.
When you say it's driven by the agents, what do you mean by that?
So, for example, the way I think they work, it would be that a certain amount of players are obviously managed by certain groups of agents. So for example, if a back row got injured in racing on a Saturday, you can be sure on Monday morning there would have been about six CVs already on the president's desk about this guy is a medical joker. So the work is kind of done for you, but is that quality work or is it sloppy work? Who's getting the best deal out of this? The agent, the player, or the club? You have to ask yourself. Sometimes you really need a quick fix, but other times I think you can be so more thorough in your investigative work about why you are signing him, who is he, what does he do, everything about the person, I think, before the player. And that's been a massive strength of the Irish provinces, because you need to know that, because Kevin has thought about it in terms of pressure really only comes on in big games, and you might only see that a few times a season, and then other times it can get swept under the carpet because the next three games are average games against average opposition. But you really need, if you're paying big money, you need to know what you're getting. But I think as we can see, and certainly in all sport in the last 3 months, it's the world is becoming bananas, and more and more big deals are being done, so it's interesting space, and we have to watch it very carefully to see how it's going to go.
Right, final question. This is from Sean Reynolds. It's directed to Raj, but I think I'll open it to the floor. Who does Raj see as heir to the Irish 10 jersey, since Paddy Jackson is currently out of the picture and Leinster will play Carberry at 15? JJH, Jay Handren, or Tyler Blaendahl? So, scenario. Here's how to make this question work. It's the Autumn Internationals. Sexton's got injured. Who's playing 10?
Rod, you took this one.
I wouldn't. For me, you know, Joey Carby playing 15 for Leinster. I wouldn't be too sure about that. I think you know, he played in the summer at 10 against the USA, and people were quick to fault maybe his kicking a goal game, but his all-round game is exceptional. And as Kev says, as a player, he has an aura. I think players know when he has the ball in his hands, he's capable of doing something that other players aren't capable of doing. So in that regard, he can light up a team. His work-ons are managing the game, but he has all the stuff that's really hard to do in terms of being able to beat the line with his eyes closed. So JJ Hanrahan is injured and has yet to, I think he's 5 or 6 weeks away from playing.
Tyler doesn't qualify until January. Mm-hmm. So you're looking at, the cupboard is fairly bare.
I wouldn't say that. No, I think, for example, you have Jack Carty in Connacht, who has had flashes of excellence, but has to kind of maintain that consistently to get his foot in the Irish door. But I wouldn't give up on him yet. I think he has something to offer big time.
And Kev, we've got the young man who was with us last week from Bristol.
Yeah. Do you think Mads could come back into the mix, Rog?
I think so, but he knows more than anyone, Kev, that it was his decision to leave. He has, decided what's best for Ian Manning and what he needs to do now. And he didn't do it at all last season, was consistently produce. So I'm sure if he does that for Bristol, he'd be really, really back in the shake-up to get back into the Irish squad. And I think that's the way it is. There's a misconception that if Ian Madigan was flying in Bordeaux, he still wouldn't have been picked. I would think the opposite. I think if he was flying for Bordeaux, I think you'd find him in all the Irish squads. I just think that his form suffered, and as a result, the management chose not to pick him, and I don't think Ian had any complaints at that. But it's a new slate, and I think he has so much to play for now because of the unfortunate circumstances with Paddy Jackson.
Right, so,
you know, Ian Keatley played in the Six Nations for Ireland against Italy not so long ago. He's obviously the forgotten man of Irish rugby at the minute, but hopefully with his experience he can rebound. But I would say for me at the minute would be Joey Carberry. I think I wouldn't pigeonhole him as a 15. I think he can easily play a 10 at the top level.
Right, there we go.
Carberry, happy with that.
Question answered. Right, listen, for next week, use the hashtag AskTHY on Twitter. If you want to ask a question, we do look at them all and store them up. Joe's very busy. Also, we had a competition this week for 2 tickets to Connacht's Guinness Pro 14 opener with Glasgow this weekend. The winner is Fiona Halligan. And just to let you know, the Guinness Pro 14 final is in the Aviva Stadium on May 26th. Tickets are available on Ticketmaster. We'll leave it there. Thanks to Rog, to Gareth, to Kev, Pat and Haley O'Connor, Joe Harrington for producing, and Shane Dempsey was on sound. We'll be back next Thursday with a new podcast. Subscribe to it on iTunes, Podcast Republic, SoundCloud and every good podcast app to get it straight to your phone. This has been The Hard Yards. I'm Andy McGeady. Thank you for listening and we'll talk to you next week.
The Hard Yards, brought to you by Ladbrokes. Passionate about sport.